Start crying. We need trauma. It's good views.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get much of that today.
There's one podcast that's been deleted, by the way.
I found law quite dry.
Open book, too. It's not even that hard.
Oh, no. There's some intelligent people that do law. These days, people not as open to hard work.
Pussies. This new generation.
Oh, I don't
you
know.
Don't use that word, but I will. I think they don't need to work as much. If I don't have a go, I can't fail. Or if I don't try, I don't fail. So for the longest time, I wouldn't actually pursue what I wanted in life because out of fear of failure. What was your first ever job? Were you like five doing like paper runs?
Yeah, I was I was thinking about this last night because I knew you'd go back on my past. So yeah, my first job was delivering the Eastern Bays Courier in my local neighbourhood. I don't know how much I was paid, but I had a bright orange sack that I used to fold up the papers and go around the neighbourhood and put them into letterboxes. Yeah, that was about the extent of it.
I used to think I was a rebel back in the day when I'd get some junk mail and put it in the no junk mail letterbox and run away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, well.
So what, like, was there an art to that? Like, what were you actually, so you chucked the paper in. Did you start trying to optimize it and try and think, if I go this route, that means I can finish quicker? Like,
oh, gosh. Well, I certainly wasn't evaluating it at that depth. But, I mean, certainly I think one thing I did was I got prepared beforehand, so they delivered it in sort of stacks, and I only folded in half, or they weren't folded at all. And so what I did is I pre-folded it down to the size that would fit into the mailboxes, and I'd stack it into my bag like the day before I was going to go out on my route. So I guess that's a form of optimization.
Yeah. Wow. So you would fold it to a point where it fits in all of them, or you knew what kind of shape each letterbox was because you're a savant and you memorized it?
Certainly not a savant. No, it was a standard fold in half and then a triple fold. That usually did it, getting it down to about that size. Fits most normal mailboxes, or back in the day you might have recalled the old the round one for the Herald, so that'd slip in there pretty easily. Yeah.
Random. Okay, so wait, where were you born? Are you from? Auckland, or
yeah, so born in Auckland. First grew up in Meadowbank originally. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was school like? Were you the cool guy, the nerd, the weirdo? I was probably a weirdo jock. That's probably how I class myself.
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly wasn't a jock. I don't know. I don't know if I was. My personality was that well defined. When I was at school, I was just sort of in the middle. I was just a. I wouldn't say I was a floater, but I was just getting on with life, I think. Yeah, so I wasn't too caught up with being anything, really, if that makes sense.
What was the biggest hurdle obstacle in your teens to overcome, or because I was trying to find purpose and I couldn't work it out, and I was so jealous of everyone else that had it worked out, and also didn't have much control over my emotions back then. Partly why I like helping people find purpose and get control of their emotions.
Yeah. Oh, good question.
Start crying. We need trauma. That's good views.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get much of that today.
There's one podcast that's been deleted, by the way.
Oh, really?
I wasn't allowed to post it.
So in crying. That case, I haven't done any acting, because otherwise I could have cried for you.
It's great content.
What would it be? I think, it was just growing up and trying to figure out, what was it that I wanted to really do, and where was I ultimately going. I think I always had a inkling that I wanted to do something entrepreneurial or business related. So, but yeah, I think at that stage, I didn't really have a clear view on how to do that. I was I was probably floating around a little bit. I think if you look at I did have a look at some of my old school reports, and I think it was a bit of a case of, could do better if applied himself. I don't know. I sort of felt in school like I found it a little bit boring. I didn't feel like I was like fully challenged or tested.
So disengaged, lost, a rudderless ship in the ocean.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. Maybe
what do you? What words do you use?
I don't know. I just sort of floated along, I guess. I just wasn't so sure on where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. I just found school a little bit boring in that regard.
What's your advice to people that are sort of disenchanted with school and bored? Like some young people listening to this, they're like, oh, what's the point? Like school's just, and they lack meaning. Was there a turning point for you when you're like, okay, this is for me, when what helped you work out what you wanted to do?
Yeah, good question. So, I mean, it probably wasn't till like post-university that I was really quite clear about what I wanted to do.
Wait, what did you study?
So I did.
You're smiling. It's going to be something weird.
Well, not too weird. It was more the journey. I started off with law, and I think I found law quite dry. And
it's open book too. It's not even that hard.
Oh no, there's some intelligent people that do law, and they've got a pretty essential role in society. Some might think they overcharge, but I started off with psychology, and I was doing science. I was really good at geography at school.
Oh, random.
I don't know. I just enjoyed it and was good at it. So I went down to Otago and took up, after I did that, I was doing psychology and geography, like completely kind of random. As I say, I didn't really kind of know what I wanted to do. I just was drawn to psychology in terms of, you know, how people think and why do they do things the way they do.
Yeah.
And so I sort of continued on with that, did a couple of years down in Otago, decided to come back to Auckland to finish off.
Did you get initiated in Otago? Did you eat a frog or something?
No, it wasn't anything like, nothing too bad like that.
But something, it sounded like you don't want to talk about it.
No, there was, yeah.
Hazing.
Put it this way, I moved back to Auckland to rest my liver a little bit. I had a good time. Managed to get some, reasonable grades and get through. But I think at that stage, if I'd continued on, I needed to do another 3 years, and it just felt a little bit too far, too long, really. So in the end, I moved up to Auckland and finished off my Bachelor of Science. It took me 4 years because I ended up with a major in psychology, geography and environmental science. Quite random, you'd think, maybe it will sort of fall into place in terms of some of the industries and jobs that I've worked with.
So you can locate the feelings.
Yeah, so, yeah.
The geography of how they're feeling. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's in Hamilton. So, I mean, during that time, I started off working in bars and nightclubs.
Free spirit.
Oh, I don't know.
Now you got a partner, you're a changed man.
yeah. So I used to, like in my, in the good old days, I used to, you may or may not have been around or been there, but Wednesday nights up in Parnell used to be the place. So worked in a few of the venues around there, and then started working at the waterfront down in the viaduct, which is now Lulazin. It's been through a couple of names.
What was your main role? Like, were you promoter, like bartender?
Yeah, so I started off as a glassy. So basically, I'd walk around, clean the tables, get the glasses and stuff like that. Essential role, and it was really useful to understand how the heartbeat of a nightclub works, because you know where where the trouble spots are and things like that.
Can you read a room? Like, if someone's like, there's drama coming. Or like, what did you learn from your glass reading technique? How to interrupt people? How to stack it? Like, what's the?
No, I mean, I think you knew where the trouble spots would be in terms of where the where to look out for people if they were if they're a bit intoxicated or where they would be, or like the classic one is down at the waterfront. You've got the Maritime Museum, and people used to walk around the whole outside of the Maritime Museum and jump the fence in. So I'd always make sure that either I was stationed there or someone else. You just sort of got the read for the place, and I ended up quickly becoming the head bartender, duty manager, bar manager. I was only 21 at this stage. So I was working like 40-hour weeks whilst doing my full-time study. And I think that was a pivotal moment for me, partly in my leadership journey and around unlocking the potential in individuals and teams. Because I sort of was applying the psychology training that I had around, setting like really clear expectations and guidance around, what's expected in terms of setting a vision of what we wanted to be as a team.
How do you do it with bartending? Hey, we want to make the best drinks, but like, I'm not inspired. Like, how did you motivate, or how did you recognize a vision that would compel people to actually show up for work? Like, what?
Yeah, that's good. Because a lot of what I do, I still is a bit by gut feel. I don't know. It's just a sort of innate for me. But I made sure I hired people who like exhibited like they had potential. So people who like seemed engaged and enthusiastic and wanted to be there. You know, I set up the way we did things around the bar in a really like consistent way so that it was predictable. I got a 2IC in place and mentored him and coached him to be, you know, to be the one in charge. All of those sort of things over a period of time till we had a team in place where no one left in for like a whole period of 6 months, which in hospitality is unheard of, really.
Oh, is it interesting? So yeah, it's high churn.
High churn in hospitality. And I think it was just the thrill of having a team that turned up that wanted to be there. And I often talk about skipping through the door when they come to work. And yeah, we were a team that sort of worked together and, you know, would socialise outside of work. And it was just a really tight-knit crew. And just, yeah, I think I learned as a leader, you had the opportunity to create that team experience and environment for people, which, yeah, I got a lot of enjoyment from. Yeah.
I wonder, because, so I was talking to a guy who does kiosks for cafes to replace staff.
Mm-hmm.
Someone comes in, pick a coffee, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But he found out that there's a huge problem in getting chefs in New Zealand at the moment.
Mm.
So it's random. So on the retention part, like, why do you think people leave so often in that retail side of things, hospitality, should I say? And how do you minimize churn? Because that's huge. Like, I can't imagine investing a lot of time into someone they keep leaving. Like,
yeah, fuck. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think we need to remember that, you know, we're talking probably maybe 15 plus years ago now.
Oh,
since,
yeah.
Since I was there.
Go on, pull it up.
and I don't want to sort of start the necessarily the full Gen Z debate or anything like that. Yeah, it is challenging these days because, you know, also on top of doing my business consulting via Beyond Potential, as I mentioned to you before, we've got a successful physio business. We've got a team of 9. Trying to find staff is a real challenge. Trying to then keep them engaged is the next challenge. And trying to provide them growth is another challenge on top of that, which everyone wants. It's a pretty challenging sort of topic because I think these days people are not as open to doing like hard work as they perhaps used to be.
Pussies. This new generation.
I don't know.
You don't use that word, but I will. No, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think so. I just think I think they don't need to work as much.
Yeah, but they...
Go on there.
Then,
challenging.
Then also, I think on the other side, their perception of work has changed and that's okay. If they're comfortable with that perception and the reality that obviously you don't make as much money, then that's I guess okay. And perhaps there needs to be a bit of a balancing there, in terms of, you know, when I used to work in those bars, the way I was able to get 40 hours in is I used to do a 16-hour shift on a Friday and an 18-hour shift on a Saturday, every week. So I'd start at 3 in the afternoon and work out my way through. And it used to be at one of the bars, I won't name it, but the rule used to be we didn't close till the sun came up. We were the last stop in town. So that necessitated...
You can probably guess. Andrew, no, just kidding. That's usually
very,
the
very close to, very close to Andrew, actually. Yeah. That's how long ago it was. But, I don't know. I think it's about... like some practical steps. It's around understanding what drives people. So in terms of engaging, I guess the newer generation, understanding what drives them. Trying to set out as clearly as you can around what's expected, and I guess how to do things. And then certainly around giving positive feedback and recognizing good results. I think that's how you get to engage and reduce the churn, and as best you can demonstrate that. In a genuine, authentic way that they are valued. Otherwise, relationships, I think to a degree have become quite transactional these days.
Yeah, a lot of swiping. Mm. So it'd be interesting to unpack that. I've never actually thought about hospitality. Like, you think there's such a tight margin and they don't pay them too much and they're often trained to be inauthentic and to cop it. You know what I mean? On average.
In what way?
They wear a mask to the experience of the client. So if a client's a dickhead, they sort of, yes, sir, sorry, sir. I think on average, there's definitely places where, you know, authenticity is encouraged and staff are valued, and then, you know, if a punter's not nice, you ask them to leave.
Mm.
I'm just wondering if we could engineer a perfect hospitality business model where there was more margin so you could pay staff more and the experience of the staff is more enjoyable and entertaining and fun, and they have a sense of pride at working there. How would you, if you could change a hospitality model to reduce churn, what would you, and you can do anything.
Yeah, gosh. Well, I mean, I think some of the challenges is probably around competition, which does drive a lot of things. So, you know, when you look at business, one couple of the key ways to, or the sort of three that come to mind, the way to differentiate yourself is through price. So either you price low and you bring in volume, or you lift the quality. So the quality of the experience of the food, of the beverages is higher, and therefore that creates demand and people want to be there. Or thirdly, you perhaps you innovate. I don't know what necessarily innovation is. And sometimes you'll see like people come out with these innovations where they're a bit fatty. I don't know if it'd be an innovation, but like if you think about the poke bowls that used to be around a couple of years ago, or the frozen yogurt stores that were before that, I wouldn't say they're innovative, but you know, they're fatty. So you don't want to go for innovation that's fatty in nature. So what would I do? I don't know. Well, I mean, I think you'd really want to try to lift the quality. Therefore, you lift the ability for, or the demand for people to pay, and you focus not only on the quality of the food, but also the quality of the client experience. So really thinking about what does that client experience look like? You know, how do you make it different? And a lot of ways you do that, I think, is about making it personalised where you can. And less transactional, more relationship based. And so, you know, potentially having a restaurant, you know, where people come back time and time again, that almost becomes perhaps your local, you know, where you have those opportunities for those relationships and genuine interactions, because people love that. As I mentioned, you know, with our physio business, we go to great lengths to really understand our clients, remember their names. We offer complimentary, still a sparkling water. We make a note around which one they prefer to have. We tend to see whole families, and we ask them how they're going. We stop and see them when we're out in the street, and we say, "G'day, how's it going?" I'm not even a physio myself. I look after the business side of things, and I take the effort to remember things about people. And I don't do that. You talk about the mask before. I don't do it because of a mask. I do it because it's great to make people feel special and wanted. And and it's not about me. It's about them, and really taking a genuine interest in people. And I guess that leads into my coaching as well, where it's about giving back to other people. It's about shining the light on them, making them powerful, unleashing their potential, which just gives me an absolute sort of thrill. It's like, I think we've gone around a bit in circles, but you talked about my life's purpose. It had gone from creating that, you know, partly that awesome team environment to now more broadly, how do you unleash potential in others? So through my consulting, it's a one-on-one leadership executive coaching. I coach directors and business owners, team and culture, so getting them aligned around a clear vision, setting them up for the right behaviours, building trust in the relationship and the organisation, and then thirdly around getting people or business owners or people in businesses to set a clear vision on where they're going through strategy and planning, and through that unleashing their potential. So yeah, I mean, have you, I guess a bit, one, I'm a big fan of sort of metaphors.
Yeah, go on, remember the metaphor.
So, I mean, have you seen a Jack-in-the-Box toy before?
I have seen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So imagine that my clients, be it they're an individual leader, they're a team, they're a business, they're sitting inside the box in the dark. They may or may not know what's outside the box, so they may be needing some help to get clear on what it is that's outside the box, and they may know what's outside of the box, but effectively they can't get out of the box themselves. So the way I do that to unleash their potential is I partner with them and turn the handle. You know, I ask those insightful questions that you said that you love to do, and in doing so they then pop out of the bottle, the box, and the spring represents that potential being released.
Boom, it plugs into your name. So I'd be curious, I'm interested in selling the intangible,
because
essentially you've got the skill set,
and
it's hard to demonstrate that if someone else doesn't say you're good at it, which is usually a referral, because a lot of people in B2B service, clients come from referral. So let's say you go to meet someone, they don't know anything about you, and you've got to say, hey, I'm good at leadership, and I'll highlight that you've got some errors in your current circumstance. Like, it's a bit of a tricky thing to unpack and sell. So what have you found is quite useful in selling the intangible?
So I guess what I tend to do, and it's part of my sort of more coaching style, is that I ask questions. So I generally will ask some open questions that are really powerful. Have you heard of open versus closed questions? So closed, that was probably a closed question because you just said yes.
Yes, I know, yeah.
I like what you did there. You know, if I was to say, do you know about open questions? Could you give me some examples? That would be, that'd be an open question because you then have to go and explain it. And so that's what I do with my clients, is I get to understand what's driving them, what they're wanting to do. And one of my key questions I often ask for clients, because normally they're coming to see me because they know of the types of services that they offer or they've been referred. And so, one of my key questions I'll always ask them is, tell me what success looks like for you, which is an open question. And then I usually just listen to them and hear what they're saying and get an understanding, and then I will reflect back to them what they've said, and then I'll ask questions about what might be holding them back from that, or where do they want to go, or where would they need support. So I mean, we're just talking hypothetical here, it's really in the moment when you're with a client and you're uncovering their need, be it they've got a leadership challenge, or they've got a team that's not functioning well, or they are wanting to actually be more high performing, or you've got a business owner, for example, who is just recently starting out and doesn't know how to run a business necessarily.
I've been obsessed with Alex Mosey. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's really good. He earned more money than all the major CEOs. He listed like 20 companies all at once combined in his 20s. And he's really good at the acquisition. He got like $500,000 people to register for a book launch that he was doing. And 250,000 turned up to watch it. And it was a book about how to get leads. And he's like, so everyone got here. I did this to achieve that. This is, I use affiliates, I use paid ads, and this is the paid ads I use, blah, blah, blah. And he uses like a closer framework in terms of asking questions. And the interesting thing was he focuses on the pain, the pain the person's experiences, and then getting them to asking all the things they've tried, which brings the pain front of mind.
Yeah.
I've tried all these things, it hasn't worked, blah, blah, blah. Do you find aspiration or pain sells better?
There's certainly value in pain.
Because you said success. What does success look like? Because you're selling hope in a way, but then you find out what's holding them back.
I think these days I'm a bit more of a glass half full aspirational. Like, if you don't have a vision of where you're going, how do you know you're ever going to get there? So, for example, you might jump into a plane, for example, right? And you might be blindfolded. So, heaven forbid, you might be able to get it off the ground, right? But then once you're in the air, how do you know where you're even going, right?
Yeah.
you're probably going to crash and burn, right?
Yeah.
Versus actually having somewhere where you want to go. And that's why I really like to focus on what the success is. In terms of then asking them what's holding them back, I guess, you know, potentially those pain points is understanding what is it that we're going to have to overcome, you know, understand the context of where they are. But, you know, once you already know where you're going, it gives you that roadmap to work towards it. And so a lot of what I do with my clients is around, you know, setting up plans, goals, and I guess with businesses in terms of measurables, in terms of what does performance look like when you're successful, and then we map that out and work towards it.
Is there, I see the challenge with B2B services, because it's intangible, someone's selling it on your behalf in the form of a referral.
Yeah.
And they come from everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you've got all these different, maybe it's the same niche and maybe there's, then you're doing well, but having a targeted way to acquire clients. What's it like as a consultant? What's it's exciting to have lots of different things.
Yeah.
It's hard to scale and it's hard to hire because you're selling the skill set that you have in someone else and having developed. Yeah, so yeah. What's life like as a consultant? To get clients, to service them? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm fortunate, as I mentioned, because a part of my time I'm running another successful business, which is really great. And so having my consulting is also offering me flex because I'm a father. In terms of getting clients, you know, it's a lot through referrals. You know, where I've worked with other providers before. A couple of my good clients have come through recruiters that I've known, and then they've needed to have a bit more. I don't want to necessarily say advance support, but like someone who understands businesses and people really well. Others is through, you know, doing Google advertising.
Yeah. What was that like?
Because
everyone's competing for the same traffic.
Yeah, it is. Look, Google's been okay. a lot of it's been through the referral on word of mouth. And through my own network. So having previously worked in the corporate world, you know, in senior roles, that's, you know, that's where a lot of where I sort of reach into in terms of people who've seen what I've done before and get in touch. Yeah,
there's a thing I've been learning is time to first value and how that impacts retention. So it's like, for me, it might be they get a client in the first 7 days that would lead to retention of 18 months when normally it might only be 8 months, let's say. Do you have like a time to first value in terms of what you do? Like, what do you identify, a specific problem, and you're like, hey, this is the outcome? Or how do you demonstrate value? Like, what's your process for like servicing a client when they come on?
So just so we're clear, so in terms of how do I demonstrate up front what the value is that I'm going to provide? Or
do you think about trying to get a quick win? For example, because think about, you're selling an intangible, you're coming and identifying problems, and then your trust is allowing you to buy a certain amount of their time.
Yeah.
And then the trust diminishes the longer the time is before the first value. So do you think about how to create value quickly, or what's usually something they would say as a tangible thing that they've gotten from it?
Yeah, I mean, it's horses for courses in terms of what is it that I'm doing for them. So that's a, I mean, it's
varies greatly.
Yeah, right? It does vary. I think the, for me, you know, I think where I get the best repeat work, or how I deliver ongoing client engagement, is actually the quality of the delivery. You know, it's hard talking about it about myself because, you know, I'm generally quite humble, but, you know, it's about the quality of the delivery that I do. It's around, I actually, when I do engage with people, I don't like to engage just transactionally. I like to engage with them on a relationship level. When I work with people, I like to, I don't know if sort of pour my heart and soul in it, but I treat the business problems, you know, almost like they're my own. Terms of, I get really passionate about solving their problems, or more, you know, flipping it around on that positive side. You know, we talked about that aspiration. In terms of getting to reach for the skies, or to strive towards success.
How do you measure it? That's mainly what I'm asking.
Yeah. So
How do you measure success? Like, is there a change in their demeanor and they're like, oh, shit, and then they take certain actions? Or is it you have KPIs that lay it out?
Yeah, so, I mean, if it's a business and a business strategy, then we'd look to have, you know, we'd look to have, like, KPIs, KRAs and things like that, so in that setting. If it's a, like, if it's a team and their sort of culture, normally I like to include team surveys, particularly how's the team before, how's it during, how's it after, particularly if I'm doing like an engagement to lift the performance of the team. If it's an individual, I'm big on sort of doing the SMART goals or putting action plans in place and looking at how they achieve against those. And I do a bit of driving for them in terms of positive encouragement and a bit of positive pressure and accountability to achieve those goals. So certainly what I do is quite measurable. One of my absolute successes in terms of leadership coaching was I had this guy and he basically doesn't have a university qualification. He came through as a carpenter originally. He works for this technical services company. They do commissioning for like air conditioning and stuff like that. So I started coaching him about 3 years ago, and he was a senior technician, and he needed a bit of support with his leadership skills and experience. I then coached him. He became the Auckland operations manager, national operations manager, and earlier this year became the GM. No university qualifications, in terms of his skills and expertise around commercial acumen, in terms of budgeting, strategy setting, risk, that sort of stuff, he probably didn't have those skills. So I started off with him because I've got a deep passion for the commercial side of business. I started off with, using my leadership experience in terms of how do you delegate, how do you hold people to account, how do you manage your time even. So I was at that sort of granular level too, how do you move up the chain, how do you then inspire and motivate people, how do you hire people to build your team, to now how do you lead a business. Now he's gone from I think 26 people at the start of this year, and there are about 35 now already. And doing a really good job against their financial targets, which they didn't really have in place as much before, not to the rigor and degree. They've just rolled out their strategy last week, been around 45 years. We just rolled it out to the company, and I helped to do that through coaching him and also the directors, because I sit on their advisory board and chair that, and it was so good that they also rolled it out across their sister companies. So I think, you talk tangible results. That's the sort of thing I can do with time. Yeah.
It wasn't so much to, hey, prove yourself to me. It was more like,
yeah.
I've been thinking about that only recently, of thinking, so Alex talks about value being the dream outcome. Mm-hmm. So the thing they want to achieve, which is the aspiration.
Yeah.
The amount of effort required to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
The less effort, like Netflix is a good example, mm-hmm. or Amazon, the less effort a person has to get dream outcome, which is the show or the product,
sure,
more valuable, the quicker they get it, and the how much they believe that they'll get that, which is social proof, referrals, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And I've been thinking about the client experience. So say someone comes on as an advisor, it would take me 3 days to go from understanding what they're doing to getting it going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's too long. Why couldn't it be you meet them the next day, we're going live, and how to continually drop that? And then also then what is perceived as the outcome, which is how quickly you can get there, which is they get money because they've tried all this advertising, it hasn't worked. So how quickly can you get the money?
Mm.
So that's why I was asking you.
I mean, do you have an example you could give me of what you've done?
Not me. My business is 5 weeks old. Okay, so my tangible benefit is just like, hey, we got booked appointments. There's 10 of them, and it's been in this time, and they're waiting on decisions from the client, which I can't impact.
Mm.
So I don't have an example in that sense. An example would be a company called Gem Launch, which Alex used to own. And they found that the most important variable in the retention of their staff was getting a high ticket close in the first 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
And what Gem Launch does is they do advertising for gym owners. And a high ticket mm-hmm. Close would be like a 6-week boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
So that became their biggest focus.
Yeah.
So then I think about that as like a person has, you have this leadership capital, mm-hmm. let's call it,
yeah.
or trust capital.
Mm-hmm.
You bring that into the fore.
Yeah.
And the longer it takes to get that outcome, the less trust that you have with mm-hmm. the client and the less they believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if we were to apply that framework, what would be, using a specific scenario, be something that you would see as a tangible, quick win for them?
In the leadership space, do you mean?
Can be anything. Yeah. It could be like, hey, our team's KPI is this.
Mm-hmm.
And then within 7 days, you take that KPI, maybe a sales team to that. It doesn't have to be 7 days. It can be a time frame. Or maybe reflecting on the clients that have had the longest relationship with you and are most appreciative mm-hmm. and what happened early on
yeah.
for them to believe to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're talking about like up front about intangibles, and a lot of what I do is focused on people and their ability to change. And a lot of clients that come to me, I think to begin with, they're not clear on what it is that they want to do. And so that's why I ask about success. So I don't know if I'm answering this question that well, but I think it's possibly a little bit more layered and complex than, converting like a sale, something that's tangible. So a lot of the time people aren't aware of where it is they want to go. So, but I could probably use an example is, if I'm sitting down with someone and they want to come up with a business plan. So I was recently sitting down with an electrician, didn't have a business plan, didn't have a marketing plan, didn't have a financial plan, didn't necessarily have the business structure in place around like insurances and stuff. I mean, I managed to sit down with them, across about a 4 or 5 hour session and get them a business plan together. So, I mean, that's quite tangible and that got him on his way. So, it depends. Once again, I think it's about horses for courses. And and when it comes to some of the more people-focused stuff, often the speed at which you can bring around results is, I mean, it's obviously dependent on how good I am as a coach, but also dependent around how ready and their ability to change and the speed at which. And sometimes I've got I really like to really push hard and get the people to results really quick. I mean, I think as intuitively I know what good looks like, and normally a sign of success for me, and I know this is not necessarily to your model that you talk about, but it's normally when I start to hear the creaks, when they start pushing back on me that I'm moving them too quickly, and that's when I know I'm getting results because they're changing and moving forward.
I wonder, and this is more of brainstorm, like it helps me formulate and understand these ideas. I'm wondering as well, like if you had an acquisition strategy where you consistently attracted a type of archetype of people mm-hmm. and got rid of anyone that wasn't, and that person might be, you might define that characteristics as someone that responds to an email within 2 minutes. They may be conservative. There may be someone that takes extreme ownership and they implement very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in this industry. Like if you picked a specific problem that you solved and that's your entry point
mm-hmm.
to what you do,
mm-hmm.
be interesting. So what would be if you were banned from doing anything else?
Yeah.
And you couldn't help any other niche and you couldn't solve any other problem except the problem that you feel most confident at and maybe the one you enjoy,
mm-hmm.
what would be that niche and that problem?
Yeah, so I think it's about getting people clear on where they want to get to, what their direction is my superpower.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's decluttering all the noise. So, when you think about, like, say if someone wants to take a change or do something differently or they want to start a business and they could be offering a range of services, what my absolute superpower is, I get them really clear and defined and get them on the direction that they want really quick. As I mentioned before, I'm really great at asking questions. I'm really great at kind of listening. I think probably because I have got a background in psychology, I'm listening to the maybe the unconscious messaging that's starting to come through, and I can really pick that apart, ask some questions, and really push them through the funnel so that they get clear on what it is that they want to do.
So let's say, and what would be the attributes of that dream person?
For me?
Yeah, the ones that do well, are they ones that are coachable? Are they ones that are arrogant?
Yeah, so I mean, I can certainly talk about the ones that I've had the most success with, but I'm
like the attributes.
Yeah,
say. Like I'm just exploring.
Yeah. So I think people, I mean, certainly people who have got an open mind or growth,
open mind.
Yeah, like a growth mindset. People who I guess are willing to accept that they don't necessarily have all the answers. That they are willing to try something new, even if they're perhaps even not sure about it because they don't know. That they are committed to, actually writing down a set of goals or a set of directions and actually working towards it consistently. Because it's a bit of a saying, what you think you can achieve over a short time, you tend to overestimate. What you think you can achieve over a long period of time, you tend to underestimate. So those would be sort of the attributes of the most successful people that that I've worked with. I mean, I'm always open to working with any type of person, because sometimes they may be arrogant and that might be a front perhaps for other things. So it's about, I'll always give things a go. Yeah.
Would there be a person in the business, or are they business owners or an industry? Like, I'll move on from this point soon, but like, if you had to just pick an industry, or only pick one that you can go real narrow and it's not just one industry, like you could pick a type of person in a business that you're really good at, would it be a GM? Would it be a person, inspirational leader?
Yeah, I think like it would be the business lead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whether they're they might be a director working in the business, or they're like the person who's been employed to run the business. Yeah.
And any industry?
Particularly services industry, I think. Yeah, and particularly, a lot of my clients are sort of service-based. I was reflecting on that before I came in, because I was thinking about, what we were going to discuss. But, probably in that services space,
And where they're the product, huh? Interesting. So let's say you came into someone and they were the business lead, they were open-minded, they were all those things that you listed, they were open and that you could teach them things and give them ideas, and their growth mindset. And you just came in and you could define how many times you see them and how often, like all the information you could get from them. And your goal is you have to do it in the shortest time frame possible. Because like an example would be like website designers, they rely on the input from the user in order to build the website.
Yeah.
So my friend, what he did is he partnered with agencies and designers, so he doesn't have to go back and forth with the designers, back and forth with the client. He's really good at the development, so he just slotted in and means they can take something that might take people months to, a week.
Yeah, sure.
So if you were so narrow on that and you could engineer the perfect sales cycle or process and get all the information and you had to get the result as short as possible, what would that look like? And it's just vision. It's just that single problem. We're going to give clarity over your vision. You're a service business leader, and then you go boom.
Yeah. I mean, if we're just doing the vision, we can just do that. Yeah. We can do that in one session.
One hour. Yeah. That's great. And then the good thing is, because it's so specific and so quick, and you can charge so much more, but then you're delivering the outcome quick as well, so they see value in it.
Yeah, but normally people aren't coming to just – I think people are not normally coming just for the vision. Yeah, because they're normally needing to be shown the way about how to put that vision into action. Because, like I say, if it's a business owner, even if it's someone who has been in business for a while, they may not be fully rounded in all areas of business. And so, you're building that skill over time. You can't just, sure, we can, what's your business vision? We can sit down, we can do it real quick. But in terms of how do you take your business forward and bring that into play, there's stuff around, building up your marketing effort and also your muscle. It's, you know, building your financial competence. It's building your ability to hire and engage staff. It's all of those things. So yeah. Yeah, I mean, would you like, I guess, would you like, you know, for you, you know, when you engage with like services like mine, for example, would you be looking for that just at short term, or would you look to engage in something longer? I mean, this is potentially a hypothetical, but yeah.
No, no. So the best thing about solving a problem is it creates another.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is you would solve that vision quickly
mm.
and create this amazing perception, and the offering is really easy to articulate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you help me with my vision, I'll be like, oh, he helps. I'm talking to a guy. And yeah. he says, I'm not clear on my vision. Oh, bro, this is what he did for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he solves vision. And then the follow-up services come mm-hmm. from it.
Yeah.
It was more of that tactical upfront. So, yeah, with mm-hmm. me, it's like first problem I might solve is the ability to make videos effortlessly. So I would call people up, hey, do you want to record 10 videos for free? No cost. You can use in the ads. I can tell you how to do it. If you want me to do it, I can.
Mm-hmm.
Turn up. Don't prepare. 60 minutes, next day you got 10 videos.
Mm-hmm.
That leads into how am I going to use the videos? Yeah. How do I post them? Mm-hmm. How do I call the leads? How do blah, 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 which leads into a long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it very, it productizes what you offer.
Yeah.
And then the challenge becomes if you've got referrals all coming from different places,
yeah.
that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're able to create messaging that solves a specific problem and mm-hmm. you have the understanding of the marketing to attract that type of person, and it's also very clear to your referral sources, this is the problem I solve. So anytime you see someone with that problem,
mm.
Then that's how that would happen. Because
mm-hmm.
I found that it's consultants I talk to have the ability to do so many context flips, juggle so many different things.
Mm.
And then in order to instill that in the next person to grow your business, I'm like, fuck. But if you had a clear, defined problem that could be yeah. productized and you had a system for it for a specific niche, then that's where you could.
Mm.
And I'm just speculating. I just like learning something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I like where you're going with that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, certainly if you're looking to commoditize or to do something that's scalable and repeatable, that's certainly certainly an approach. Yeah, I guess rightly or wrongly, I usually tackle my
bespoke. You enjoy more as well, I imagine. Like
yeah, the, I like to. I know that comes back to that whole point before. I really like to get to know people. I really like to own the challenge. I don't tend to go with one size fits all in terms of solutions. I've worked across a range of backgrounds, different projects, different types of clients, and so I try to draw on that best of that experience, but also understand. You know, as I said, people move at different speeds, and so trying to then, it's almost like a I know it's hard to maybe visualize, but it's almost a bit like a art form that you don't always have with a client from A to B, because you're going to have to shape them and push them and get them back on path along the way.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, I guess I wasn't saying productize in the sense that you have to scale. It's more client experience. Like if you focused on that one thing for 15 years
mm-hmm.
that followed into the other problems and it was just a particular person, the hard thing is, you know, you got to take what you can get, like where the fuck it comes from. Yeah, you just got to go with it.
Mm.
But if you had a clear offering for a clear individual and then you did the repetitions for 15 mm. years just in that one problem, sure. that leads into the other problems that you still do what you normally do.
Mm.
And then everyone's so aware of that and how that compounds over time.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows you're the vision guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not the, oh, yeah, I think he can help your problem. He did this thing with this, improve my team performance.
Sure.
And that becomes a challenge. Mm. Like, it's hard for me to sell what you do,
mm-hmm.
even if I'm a believer.
Yeah.
How do you encourage referrals? Like, what's your, I never ask for them. I wouldn't say I'm good at it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I guess I mean, I do talk to people about what it is I do. You know, That's why I do have that analogy around the jack in the box to help people actually visualize what it is that I do. Because as you're right, I mean, I do a lot of stuff and we've sort of delved somewhat deep in that. But I often come back to the, you know, using something really clear around the jack in the box in terms of getting you clear on your vision and your direction and accelerating you towards your future. So I find that quite effective when I've explained it to other people, and they are able to use that when they're talking to other people about what I do. So,
yeah, like if I say, he helps business leaders and services get clearer direction on their vision.
Mm.
And then I'm like, go see him. And how long does it take for him to work that out? Oh, one session. You know what I mean? I'm trying it out, brother, because it helps me learn. I don't know about you.
Well, I'm quite interested because you obviously, we sort of sat down just before you came on, and you're telling me about your own personal journey about, you've launched your new business model 5 weeks ago. So you were doing a different model before.
Lots of different models that you tried.
and now you're on to this. So I think I'm sort of picking up from you a real passion to be really defined and niched and really clear on where you're going. And maybe that's what you've got, I can sense an energy from you that you've sort of figured it out for yourself.
Yeah.
So, how did you go through that process for yourself?
So first it was by accident. I got a client, didn't expect, and then then had other sales meetings with different types of clients from different industries and thinking how much time I invested in then and how much time I had to invest to understand the financial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, shit, that's a lot of drag.
Yeah.
So then I just started asking financial advisors. And then when I forced myself to focus on one thing, the creativity, for example, with a financial advisor, you and I would be talking, I'd be understanding what sort of things you want to achieve financially.
Mm-hmm.
And then to create the plan would take me 1 to 10 hours on average. So that becomes a bottleneck. If I get really good at acquisition and putting these advisors in front of people, they can't make plans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I can do is take the transcript of Zoom, interpret into a statement of advice. So, half their work's done, and then potentially create a process for generating the financial advice. And then I also have snapshots. So each time I have a new advisor, all the offerings are already tested, because that was the challenge. When I had an advisor, I'd run Facebook ads. I didn't know which words would work.
Mm.
So I tried all these different words, and now I'm like, oh, this is $17 a lead using these words.
Yeah.
Use it with this next person. So it's just the realization of I'm quite creative in ideas, but shiny things, and I changed my shit too much.
Mm.
And now when I'm forced here in those parameters to only think of them, the degree of service you can provide them.
Yeah.
And then also training salespeople. If I'm calling up leads from different industries, I'm going to have a different pitch. It's going to have context flip. It's going to be very hard to go from one to the other. But if I have a salesperson that doesn't multitask and focuses on one area and just booking insurance clients, and we work on that every day for 30 minutes, that's why.
Yeah. So if I was to ask you the question, if I was referring you to other people, what would be the things that I'd be saying to them about what is it that you do?
Well, essentially, I book appointments for financial advisors.
Mm-hmm.
So qualified appointments where they're excited to see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do for advisors. So if you have an advisor. Yeah.
But why are you different from others, would you say?
It's performance-based, for one.
Mm-hmm.
So we only make money when you do. And very few can make videos at scale.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they charge $1,000 to $8,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. And then you talked about that time to value equation. How do you measure that?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I could go time to appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So when they actually see someone and it's positive,
yeah,
that would probably be most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And also how quickly the campaigns are set up and how quickly they get the videos, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're excited, it's ego, they want to see what they made, they want to believe in it, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So videos, I want to deliver it the next day. And appointment, I'd have to get that result really quick.
Mm.
And I think about how I charge them. to enable them to pay more on advertising to get the results sooner.
Mm-hmm. And for you then, like, what would your vision of success be?
Well, my end goal in life is to give every person the opportunity to live a fulfilling life. That's finance is just a vehicle to do that.
When you say every, like, could you expand on that a bit more? Like, when you, what does it actually mean tangibly?
Yeah, so access to information that can help you get control of your mind and find purpose. So that's content.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part, I'm not too sure on how it's going to come. I find environment impacts people's psychology more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I thought I was going to help businesses, because a third of your life is in business.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure the tactical way that I do it. At the moment, if I help financial advisors, they can help a few hundred people each get financial security and be life coaches for them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a way. But basically, it would be information and environments is how.
So I think that's like that sounds like a great aspirational vision, and good visions are aspirational, because oftentimes you never actually achieve.
I just like chasing it.
You never achieve your vision because, for example, at our physio business, to deliver a world-class well-being experience locally. Now, world-class is constantly evolving, so you're always chasing, right?
Hmm.
Which is awesome, because it gives you that destination that you're trying to track towards that I mentioned before. But for you, how would you know? Like, if I was to say in 5 years' time, I sat down with Ryan and I said, "Hey, mate, you had that sense that you were successful. Can you paint a picture for me of what that would look like and feel like? Like, what would you have done actually to achieve that?"
So I've had chats before about this, and it's unclear, undefined, and doesn't have any KPIs.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that when I make goals, I don't like them. I get nervous, anxious, don't enjoy it. So I just like the pursuit of it. So just the fact that I'm taking steps each day that feels like I'm going towards it, I would feel successful. I don't actually.
What makes you uncomfortable about having goals and measures?
Well, there would be a self-worth piece of like feeling that I could do it.
By having goals or by not having goals?
By having goals. Like if I don't have a goal, I can't fail. Or mm-hmm. if I don't try, I don't fail. So for the longest time, I wouldn't actually pursue what I wanted in life because out of fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
So probably something like that, if I had to guess.
Mm. Yeah, because I've noticed, like, you know, through the podcast and stuff, like we talked about it earlier, you've changed direction and focus around what it is that you do. Rich, we're talking about when you first phoned me. You know, you were doing something else. You called me up at your sales pitch was a little bit sort of muddling, a bit confusing. and then although it's one of the most memorable sales calls I've ever had, as it turns out, and I think we chatted, we actually talked a bit about our philosophy around what we want to do, and we talked about a whole lot of purpose, and I think we connected. That's how we actually ultimately connected, and as it turned out, you were also wanting to sell me something, right? So it's quite interesting to be now sitting here. And then you said just before we met, you know, that you feel like the podcast wasn't doing well, but yet you've got your top 5% on Spotify podcasts, right? So, yeah. I mean, like, and you were downplaying that. So you're 5% of the top Spotify, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, you talk about, well, what is it that I do? So, it is a goal setting. It is around believing in yourself. It is about setting a clear vision. And there's a bit of an old sort of management saying around what gets measured gets managed. And that's where, when I talk about with my clients that I accelerate them towards the future or their future successes, I partner with them and I set them up with goals and I keep them accountable and I challenge them and I coach them and I give them all the tips and tricks specific to their situation. So I'm not like cookie cutter in terms of what do I do as a consultant and a coach. That's what I do. So, like, you know, even if I sit here with you, I'd probably challenge you and say, you know, look, you've got a whole lot of enthusiasm. You love dreaming big, right? You're fairly intelligent. You ask really insightful questions. You know, you've got some really awesome people on your podcast already, right? I think you've achieved quite a bit. I think there's probably a little bit where you might chop and change and that you don't believe in yourself, but I think you've got probably a whole lot of potential, Ryan. And yeah, I mean, I think that's, I wouldn't have, I think that's how we did connect on that common ground, really. yeah.
Cool. Thank you. We've done an hour.
Yeah.
So I think that was a beautiful way to end. So appreciate for you coming on.
Awesome. Thank you.